Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The U.S. is the only industrialized country without paid family leave. A group of Florida lawmakers are now trying to change that.
We claim that we care about the building block that is the family. What is the starting point if not children?
When people start experiencing mental health problems, many don't know there's a state program that could help.
I'm really surprised when I go out in the public and talk to people, even people in the mental health field, who are not aware of this program and its success.
And talks at the state capitol have once again turned to gambling and the lottery, but it could remain just that, talk. I'm Lynn Hatter in for Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. When a child is born, the first month spent with parents can be crucial for development. Ryan Daly reports a bill in Florida's House and Senate looks to give parents with a newborn paid time off from work, but not everyone is sold on it.
The United States is the only country in the developed world that does not have some form of paid family leave.
Representative Dottie Joseph is a sponsor of the House measure. She's among the Democratic lawmakers who want parents who have just had a baby, adopted a child, or had a child placed in their foster care to have 3 months off from work. House and Senate bills look to force employers to allow for family leave without threat of firing or demotion.
Last year, I sponsored this legislation, and I will tell you that I was frustrated. And I'll tell you the reason I was frustrated is because, as you've heard, this is not a black or white issue. This is not a Democrat or Republican issue. This is a people issue.
Joseph is hoping her bill will get a hearing this year, though neither the House nor Senate measure have been scheduled. The Senate's version is being carried by Tampa Democratic Senator Janet Cruz. At a recent press conference, Joseph stood alongside Democratic lawmakers and clergy with the organization Faith in Public Life to make a push for the legislation.
If we claim that we care about family values and we claim that we care about the building block that is the family, what is the starting point if not children?
The bill applies to employees who work 20 or more hours per week and employers who have a minimum of 15 employees. The measure would make employers subject to fines if they don't make a notice of the family leave policy visible to employees. The bill's backers were asked about the business lobby's argument that giving 3 months off would ultimately hurt small businesses. Representative Tracy Davis says she's heard from business owners who feel the opposite.
The other side of that is we've also heard from business owners of small businesses that applaud this legislation. So there's two sides to every story, and the other side is we have businesses that wholeheartedly support this bill.
The proposal's language states its purpose is to make Florida laws on the matter more current. It says, quote, the need for paid family leave has increased as the participation of both parents in the workforce has increased and the number of single parents has grown. Still, Davis indicated Republican leadership isn't sold on the bill.
Well, at this point, leadership is not willing, I guess, as the bill, not willing to have a conversation, are not willing as the bill is written. That was the last conversation I had. As the way this legislation is written now, they're not willing to entertain it. But if, again, we can come to the table, like my colleague said, there are conversations to be had.
Representative Joseph, who is an employment lawyer, says negotiations are possible.
There are ways that we can do it. Sometimes there are ways where employees contribute their time, their excess leave time, into a pool so it costs the employer nothing extra. There are lots of creative ways to do it if there's a will to do so. And we're happy to have those conversations.
In December, President Donald Trump signed an expansion of the National Defense Authorization Act that will provide paid family leave for federal civilian employees. Set to go into effect in October of this year, it will apply after the birth, adoption, or foster care placement of a child. Reverend Joe Paramore is with the organization Faith in Public Life.
If the White House can extend these benefits to federal employees, then Florida can extend these benefits to its families and to its citizens.
Paramore is pushing for the legislation to have a shot at getting passed this session.
There's no substitute for the bonding that is done during the time immediately following a new child, either by birth or by adoption.
Both the House and Senate measures would take effect in July of this year. I'm Ryan Daly.
Programs to help people with psychosis could receive more state funding over a new proposal moving through the legislature. Robbie Gaffney has more.
I like to record videos a lot. I like to edit videos and been leaning more toward a producer.
Jasmine Gray was going to school in Alabama for communications media with a focus in production. Gray loves to write and be creative, but she's been struggling with major depression.
I struggled really badly with doing things on a daily basis that I needed to do, like even simple things as showering, you know, or just getting out of the bed most days.
According to the National Institute of Mental Health, 3 out of 100 people will experience psychosis. It's when someone has a break from reality. It could take the form of hallucinations, paranoia, delusions, or disordered thoughts and speech. These episodes are triggered by a combination of genetics and life stressors, such as a life-threatening car crash. Gray moved back home to Panama City, and her mother encouraged her to enroll in what's called a First Episode Psychosis Program, or FEP. A short-term program that provides therapy, medication management, and more to people experiencing psychosis for the first time. According to a state analysis, only 7 counties in Florida offer FEP programs. Life Management Center in Bay County offers those services for free. It targets people aged 16 to 35. The agency's CEO, Ned Ailes, says that's because people experience psychosis for the first time during that age.
You know, the whole point is we're trying to catch people early, very early, in this disorder, because the prognosis for individuals that you catch very early is tremendously improved. It's like any other healthcare problem.
Gray has been with Life Management's program for 4 months now.
So coming into the program basically almost saved me, you know, aside from my mother. It opened my eyes to the fact that I'm not the only one really dealing with a lot of the symptoms that I have.
Now, St. Augustine Republican Representative Cindy Stevenson is trying to get FEPs more funding. Her proposal would allow them to apply for the Criminal Justice Mental Health and Substance Abuse Reinvestment Grant Program. Stevenson says not many people know about FEPs.
I'm really surprised when I go out in the public and talk to people, even people in the mental health field, who are not aware of this program and its success.
As for Gray, she's not sure what her future has in store. Stevenson's proposal is heading to its third committee stop. The Senate version has not yet been heard. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Florida lawmakers appear to be done with bonus programs. The House and Senate have unveiled their proposed spending plans for the upcoming fiscal year, and neither proposal includes funding for teacher and principal bonuses. Melanie Birkin lives in Broward County. She's been a teacher and social worker for 20 years and makes about $60,000 a year. That may sound like a lot, but $60,000 in South Florida doesn't go as far as other parts of the state.
20 years, but I can't afford my home, and I don't live in a mansion, trust me. So I do thank you all for taking the time to listen. Please just consider veteran teachers as well as it's important to recruit. But I think that you're going to lose the people that you need to retain.
Birkin says she's never qualified for the state's Best and Brightest program, despite being rated a highly effective teacher for years. She was speaking to the Senate's Education Appropriations Committee Wednesday. The chamber is moving forward with an effort to repeal the state's Best and Brightest bonus program while also putting $500 million toward raising starting teacher pay, though not exactly in the way Governor Ron DeSantis wants.
Yeah, his original estimate was, I think, $600 million was needed to bring everybody to the 47.5. We've attributed $500 million, but we gave that flexibility for the veteran teachers which was not something that was afforded within the governor's proposal.
That's Republican Senator Kelly Stargell. The everyone is starting teachers. The flexibility she's talking about is an effort by the Senate to give districts that have already hit the starting pay goal the ability to roll leftover dollars to veteran teachers. DeSantis's Year of the Teacher push hinges on boosting starting teacher salaries to $47,500. The governor also wants a new bonus program for teachers and principals, and he wants $300 million for that. In all, his education pay package is around $900 million. The Senate's plan comes in $400 million short.
My recommended fiscal year 2021 budget reflects many of your thoughts and recommendations.
Republican Representative Chris Latvala chairs the House's Education Appropriations Committee. House Speaker Jose Oliva was initially skeptical of DeSantis's plan, and he questioned whether the state could come up with the money. Wednesday, Latvala rolled out his education spending proposal. It includes $650 million for teacher raises. Here's the breakdown.
Of this total amount, $500 million is provided to increase the base salary of classroom teachers to an amount that will get the state to a weighted statewide average starting base salary of $47,000, which will enable Florida to have the second highest average teacher pay in the nation.
The remainder is given to districts to decide how they want to spend it on veteran teachers. The House's figure still falls short of DeSantis's $900 million ask because it, too, does not include a bonus program. One group that likes what it sees so far is the state's largest teachers union, the Florida Education Association. President Frederick Ingram says the House and Senate spending plans are steps in the right direction, and he's glad to see lawmakers may finally be listening when it comes to the issue of bonuses.
Bonuses in this state have not worked. We have said that over and over, time and time again. It seems as though some lawmakers are starting to get that message and understand very clearly that these are educators and these are people who want salaries that are contributable to their retirement and a more sustainable way of life.
Ingram wants to keep that momentum moving, especially when it comes to ensuring those who've been teaching longer, as well as non-classroom teachers and others, also get raises.
There's lots of time for conversation, and we will continue to build relationships and have those conversations and put pressure where we need to. But I think that our message is penetrating through, that our educators in the state of Florida are abysmally paid.
The budgets still have a way to go before being finalized. Both chambers will still have to finish ironing out their respective spending plans. They'll have to reach a dollar amount and then try to iron out differences. The budget is the only bill lawmakers are constitutionally required to approve. And unlike the federal government, Florida must have a balanced budget. I'm Len Hatter. Still to come on Capitol Report, until more money started flowing, many homeowners in the areas devastated by Hurricane Michael found little housing help available.
Yeah, we tried, but I was immediately denied and told that I didn't qualify for anything.
Some worry a bill to put warning labels on lottery tickets could do more than that.
Someone may get the idea that by amending the statutory language, that they may be able to then legalize sports betting through the Florida lottery.
And lawmakers want to make sure courts are treating defendants the same, no matter their financial status.
Plea negotiation should be based on that person's case, that person's prior record, not their bank account.
Available and affordable housing remains hard to find for many North Florida families more than a year after Hurricane Michael. But Tom Flanagan reports the Florida Housing Finance Corporation is trying to help.
Kristen Cummings was a special needs teacher at the now mothballed St. Andrew School in Panama City. As Hurricane Michael approached that fateful October day in 2018, she and her family decided to hunker down.
My children at the time were 17, 14, and 3. So we were there with my parents and our dog, and we rode out the storm. And after the storm was over, we realized that we would not be able to stay in our house.
Cummings literally stumbled upon what seemed a last hope, the Florida Housing Finance Corporation. Its executive director is Trey Price.
We're the long-term permanent housing folks. We're not the Department of Emergency Management, and we're certainly not FEMA, who mainly deal with temporary housing assistance. So what we were able to do is to put money in to immediately begin our process of awarding money to developers to begin rebuilding the rental housing stock that was significantly damaged by Hurricane Michael throughout the 11-county area.
All well and good, but not much help for homeowners like Kristen Cummings. Then, says Price, his agency was able to expand its mission.
Where we came up with was to allow for up to $15,000 in down payment assistance and closing cost assistance. A lot of times with our down payment assistance programs, they're aimed at first-time home buyers, but of course, with home buyers who have been affected like Kristen and others, they're looking for another home.
For Cummings, that program expansion was just what she and her family needed.
I mean, I was quite shocked and very pleasantly pleased because it really did allow my family and I to get out of the fifth wheel and out of the house that was so destroyed because it was completely gutted. And in fact, that house is still not finished. So without the Florida Housing Authority grant, we would have still been in the fifth wheel waiting.
Of course, there are many other people like Kristen Cummings in the areas so hard hit by Michael. So Florida Housing's Trey Price says he's hoping they'll make use of what help is available. Meanwhile, at the Capitol, advocates are working to remind state lawmakers that Florida's affordable housing crisis isn't confined to storm-tossed northwest Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan.
Over 97% of criminal cases in the U.S. are resolved through plea deals, but sometimes those offers are better for defendants who have more money. Lawmakers say that's not fair. Blaise Ganey has the details.
Florida law requires courts to charge for the cost of prosecution for each case. Usually that covers investigative costs, expert witness fees, and time spent preparing for and participating in trial. The amounts are set at no less than $50 for a misdemeanor or $100 for a felony, but there is no maximum amount a court can charge. Legislative consultant for the Public Defender Association, Nancy Daniels, says some courts take advantage of that.
What happened in the past in a couple of circuits around the state is that state attorneys got into a practice of offering a better plea to people if they would pay more costs of prosecution.
Daniel says they wouldn't be shy about it either.
So what was happening is they'd say, well, we'll give you 3 days less in jail if you give us $200 in cost of prosecution instead of the $100 for a felony, or, you know, that type of variation on the theme.
Daniels thinks that's wrong.
That shouldn't be part of the plea negotiation. The plea negotiation should be based on that person's case, that person's prior record, not their bank account.
A bipartisan team is trying to fix the problem. Tallahassee Democrat Representative Ramon Alexander and Longwood Senator Republican David Simmons want to cap how much can be charged for cost of prosecution. The caps would be set at the current minimums. If the cost of prosecution is higher, a court can approve an increase. The money goes toward the state attorney's revenue trust fund. Daniel says it's used to fund office operations and even salaries.
When you have it, you can spend it for your office's benefit. So there's kind of a natural incentive to try to keep that fund as healthy as possible.
But Tampa Republican Representative Jamie Grant says revenue isn't the topic at hand.
I think it is important, members, as this moves forward, that we separate two separate issues. There's the economics of making sure that our state attorneys have a reimbursement for the cost of prosecution and that is accurate and that it reflects the expenses and the cost of prosecution. There's a fundamentally different question if a single state attorney or assistant state attorney in the state of Florida is making contingent a plea deal on somebody willing to accept an amount of money. That is nothing more or nothing less than extortion and bribery with a badge.
Some state attorneys say the bill isn't needed. They argue the practice of offering better plea deals to richer people is no longer common. But Grant says it still needs to be fixed in the law books.
I do think he highlights the fact that perhaps it's not happening today. I do believe can get to a place where we ensure that it's not happening in the future again. Because I don't know how to describe that other than corruption if it's happening, and simultaneously make sure that we haven't kneecapped state attorneys in recovering the actual cost of prosecution.
The bill has two committees left to go in both chambers. I'm Blaise Ganey.
A bill that would put a warning on Florida lottery tickets has cleared its first committee in the House. But as it moves forward, some worry the measure could become a vehicle for future sports betting plans. Regan McCarthy has more.
A bill by Bradenton Republican Representative William Robinson would require the words "play responsibly" to be printed on every ticket or lottery ad.
So the warning label is now just "play responsibly," which many of us may know that's actually the lottery's slogan. So we've incorporated that formally into the legend of the face of the ticket.
The bill also prohibits the use of electronic devices to play lottery games. Governor Ron DeSantis vetoed similar legislation last year. That proposal would have included a warning that red lottery games may be addictive, in addition to the words "play responsibly." DeSantis pointed to a report from the state's revenue estimators as a reason for his veto. The report found the warning could lead to a minimum loss of $80 million that would have been paid by the lottery into the state's education trust fund. That's money typically used to pay for Florida's Bright Futures scholarships. In his veto letter, DeSantis said he wanted to help keep education affordable. But Claremont Republican Representative Anthony Sabatini says he thinks the warning should be there anyway.
All I can think of is, why are we as a state wanting to push lottery towards these people that are going to be deterred by a warning label? If they see a warning label and it's true that it's going to put them back over the edge to the point where they're not going to purchase the ticket, those are not the people we should be luring into purchasing lottery tickets, our state-sanctioned gambling system. So once again, it just reinforces the importance of the bill that a warning label does, I think, remind a certain amount of the lottery-buying populace that they could potentially have a problem.
But John Sawinski with the group No Casinos says his organization is worried about another part of the bill. It would clarify that the lottery cannot participate in sports betting. Sawinski worries that rule could be turned around.
Our only concern about placing the language with regard to sports betting in there is that we believe this, as well as the internet gambling, is inherently unconstitutional. And we would fear that at some point in the future, someone may get the idea that by amending the statutory language, that they may be able to then legalize sports betting through the Florida lottery.
A constitutional amendment passed in 2018 requires voter approval for any new casino gambling, but there's some question about what that rule applies to. State lawyers argue the Florida Lottery and agreements with the Seminole Indian Tribe are exempt. Sawinski disagrees, but Brevard Republican Representative Randy Fine says that's just an opinion.
You have an opinion about what the staff apparently wrote in the staff analysis, and they have their own opinion as well. They're just two competing opinions, but your opinion is not backed up by the Supreme Court of Florida or anyone else. This hasn't been litigated. You're just presenting your opinion on what it means, as obviously someone who is very involved, but it is your opinion.
Meanwhile, Senate President Bill Galvano told reporters, while there's no news to share yet, a new Seminole compact and sports betting plan aren't off the table. In the meantime, he says budgeting decisions will continue to be made without any expectation of revenue sharing from Seminole casinos.
Chair Hudson, as he said earlier this week, is having some discussions, and I think it's a valid exercise, but we're not prepared to roll anything out yet. And if we can see a path, we'll attempt it. If not, we are not dependent on the revenue share from the Seminole tribe, and then we'll just go about our business and budget without it.
I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Lynn Hatter in for Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, within the next decade, 25% of Floridians will be over 60, and so will most new residents moving to the state. As Florida grays, it's placed greater demands on healthcare and related services. State funding has fallen behind. Now, as Steve Bosquet reports, Broward County thinks it has an idea to address the coming silver tsunami, but it needs the legislature to help.
Broward has long been a popular destination for retirees, drawn by the sea, shopping, and sunshine. The state's second largest county projects a huge surge in over 60 residents in the coming years as the last of the baby boomers enter their 60s. It's called a silver tsunami. This graying population needs programs and services that don't yet exist. And to pay for it all, Broward leaders want to collect property taxes through a new separate entity, an independent taxing district known as a senior services council. Broward voters would have to approve the taxing district, but here's the catch. The idea needs the approval of the legislature. A leading advocate of the idea is Broward County Commissioner Nan Rich, a former Democratic legislator.
The goal is to try and educate the legislators to the fact that they are not taxing anyone. This is their argument, but it's always the same. You know, we're not going to pass this because it's raising a tax. Well, you're not raising the tax. You're allowing the voters in Broward County to determine whether or not they want to tax themselves for a very important reason.
But convincing conservative Republicans to endorse a possible new tax won't be easy, especially in an election year. One of those Broward has to convince is Representative Jamie Grant of Tampa, who's skeptical.
But it is a construct of state statute. There's a reason they have to come to us. One of the things I love about state government is that we created the federal government and we created local government. And so where people say, well, how come I keep having to come back to you? Well, it's because we're the state and we're sovereign, and any subdivision has to be blessed by us. It's not to pick on Broward. It's not to even pick the issue. I'm just not a fan of the ever-expanding number of special districts and increasing taxes.
Taxpayers in Broward have repeatedly taxed themselves for all kinds of improvements, from school construction to attacking its chronic traffic congestion. 20 years ago, voters approved the creation of a children's services council, also paid with property taxes, that coordinates nearly 100 programs for the county's youngest residents. Nan Rich says she has no doubt a special taxing district for seniors would be approved by voters.
I mean, it shows this community that works together in an incredible way. People are willing to work with each other, to partner, to make things happen in the community. I think we're a unique community that way. I don't think Dade is like we are. Not to the degree that people are willing to partner with each other.
Rich may be right. Take Sophie Bach, a 95-year-old retiree in the Century Village complex in Pembroke Pines. She thinks a senior services council is a great idea.
I'd be for that because whether or not I'd be involved at my age, it probably would be for the future. But the seniors, there are so many of us. We need additional protection. It's a dire need. You know, so many of us, something comes up, and who do you go to?
Broward's Democrat-dominated legislative delegation is an island of liberalism in a conservative capital. The bill creating a special taxing district for senior services, House Bill 983, has not yet been scheduled for a hearing, and the 9-week legislative session is already 3 weeks old. I'm Steve Bosquet.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Robbie Gaffney, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Steve Bosquet. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back next week. Join us each night for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag.